Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, January 17th, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. My name is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Grant?
I thought I did my best at the disc jockey imitation. What do you think?
Yeah, you're doing a superb job.
Very resonant tone, yeah. And very deliberate, right? Very
I dumb. Know that now, how happy that makes you. Go ahead.
Then I have to stoop to my editorializing each week, so I truly apologize to all listeners for it. I can't help myself. I'm probably the one that started that years ago. Directly against all the speech classes in school, against all the parameters and general rules. But I didn't really editorialize for a long time, but I caved into it many years ago. Because I used to not like when people would do that. But then, because they, try to follow the general parameters, and then I actually caved to the whole thing. But I will not cave to poor grammar, like we were talking about last week. I reviewed the show a little bit, Oh, boy. So I will not and cannot cave into improper writing skills and speaking skills. Albeit I make mistakes and, stammering like I just did just now and what have you, but because I don't want to get too professorial. I don't want to be too much like what's the guy's name? Alvin Whitehead? Is that his name? Whiteside?
Oh, Greg Whiteside. Well, yeah, he's the...
Perfect.
For people that
Mr.
don't know
Perfect.
Who he is... He's the presenter on WRTI Classical Radio Station in the greater Philadelphia area.
Yeah, I call him Mr. Perfect. If you ever made an error, you would get in the glider that John Denver flew up and crashed into the ocean, commit suicide. Just like when John Denver, his voice cracked on Johnny Carson. He was so depressed. Like, what did he do? He made a mistake, I can tell people were so brittle, you ping them the wrong way. Oh, I made a failure. And then they never show up on stage ever again, They crash in the face of the mass consciousness. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
To err is human, Shakespeare said.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find it to be an exacting situation. But having said all that, I may get on the subject this week. I promised in the last week, I promised I would be topic-driven this week.
What's the topic then?
Well, the topic is supposedly we explore the 1930 Geneva Convention, international bankruptcy, and its contemporary effects on our society. I cheated and read the description.
Mm-hmm.
But I assure you, I don't use notes. It's a free fall. I don't use any nets and everything when we do the Willenda Trapeze Act. So the notes get binned, but then say maybe you should take some notes, right? I think we're doing pretty good. You see, I can tell the jokes without having to script them.
Yeah, we don't script anything, as if people can't tell that.
Yeah, absolutely. Extemporaneous here. But I always liked that in school. I was good at extemporaneous. I was not good at the note thing. But I was funny, nevertheless. Comedic relief, right? A relief of all your comedy. Then you can't laugh anymore. When you laugh here, then you don't laugh. You're laughed out. Like Woody Allen said, they're just laughed out. You can't put two comedians on at the same time. He's getting a bunch of laughs and then expecting me to get a bunch of laughs. They're laughed out,
That's right.
That was really good. That was the movie Annie Hall. For those people that do like Woody Allen, or if they're too young to even understand who Woody Allen is, right?
Yeah, it's possible.
I remember I was standing in line at a cinema down in a state here I won't mention, but the I was in line, and I said, just doing some small talk, I said, did you see that movie with Robert Redford? And the young person was in line and said, who? Like that? I went, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, these are people, they're still in movies, but they're not, you know, to the young people are probably not, don't know them. So
I guess sometimes they don't. So it's like, and really, whoop-de-doo, who cares, ultimately? The old celebrityism, yeah. What have you. All right. All right, so we'll get down to this real serious disease here in terms of the 1930 Geneva Convention bankruptcy, which ironically, albeit I discovered a fix for it years ago, but at the same time, I don't really think you can implement it. It just like I made excuses for a long time of not implementing it, albeit I had the fix of really not having the time and the wherewithal to really get involved with the whole thing and to divert that. So I made those excuses, but then upon further examination, it may not even be possible. Do you remember why it's probably not possible to put you on the spot, Gabrielle, like I do so much?
Okay. You're coming through a little bit garbled. Do I remember why what's not possible?
To implement the fix for the bankruptcy, because we discovered that in the last couple of years. It probably may be impossible. Yeah. So did that come to mind, the answer to that?
Why it's impossible to make the fix for the bankruptcy?
Well, not impossible, but unlikely in the near future.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you know, we want to replace the notes with certificates, and I know your fix is putting a certificate on the wall, like a replica of a certificate, I guess an enlarged replica of a certificate on the bank walls to show that that's what the notes are really certificates rather than recalling all the notes. So you think that's impossible to do?
No, but that's a good explanation for the fix, and I appreciate that, bringing clarity to that, because it's really, even though I do talk about the fact that paper should really be independent instruments, and they should not necessarily be backed by anything, but the problem is the note in the marketplace is considered by banking definition to be a debt instrument. So that's the real problem. But what I was referring to in the answer, but at the same time you did me a favor of explaining the fix, is that because of the mathematics issue, that all the banks, remember when I was saying this, the banks want to get down to the penny in terms of bank equilibrium, but I've proved many times over and discussed that it's virtually impossible to get an exact mathematics, an exact bank equilibrium. There needs to be an approximate mathematics. But they won't recognize that or implement that in the marketplace because you cannot get it specifically down to pennies, or in England they say the pennies or the pence, that you can't get it down to specifics like that or exacting numbers. So that becomes a problem. Over a long period of time, these inaccurate accounting procedures result in they have the 70-year cycles of bankruptcy. But I'm always pointing to the one in 1930 Geneva Convention because the monies that we have are the result of that. But these cycles of bankruptcy occur, albeit it's seemingly a long time, like 70 years, but they just can't cope with the abundance of the insolvency that takes place through this not being able to measure it accurately. See, so that's the problem. That's why upon investigation with my UK group in the mornings, we did a real strong analysis of that several years ago, and what came out of it was that it may be impossible because of this inaccurate mathematics or not allowing an approximate mathematics. I don't even know how you would do that. I mean, it's just a theoretical opinion from me that needs to be done because it's not going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen in terms of getting it exact. We live in a relative world, we live in an uncertain world, been proven by physics many times over, and we're relaying that truth on this show. I don't think anybody does it as specifically as we do. That's why I consider myself the recommendibus, the last say in all these things. I mean, I don't like the position, but I don't hear it anywhere else. You see, I mean, I don't hear people talk about the same things that we do. And then I get a lot of really nice compliments and opinions and viewpoints that what I say is really remarkable. And they wonder how that could be. I say, well, the truth is very stimulating, you know, or at least pursuing it and making it your best efforts to explain it correctly or get down to some nth details that maybe other people aren't pursuing. And they generalize, and then they start talking about these generalizations, but the people are not satisfied. And then they're not stimulated in that direction to be interested at all. They want to be entertained and go off somewhere else and escape from the whole mess because nobody can get down the cases. So do you remember what I was talking about that in terms of the approximate mathematics issue?
Say that again. In terms of the what? I don't know what's wrong with it. It's a little bit unclear. Go ahead.
Oh, it's muffled again? Is that better now?
Okay. That's a little bit better.
I was reviewing last week, and maybe the... I'll turn up the volume. Maybe that's the problem. I hope it's not.
Pump up the volume.
Is that better now?
Okay, slightly. So what's the question? You said something about in terms of mathematics or something. Is that right?
In other words, the issue that I had presented was that because we don't have approximate mathematics in the banking field, that causes bankruptcies over a period of time. Because the overdrafts and the banking equilibrium doesn't ever balance out. You can't balance the accounts exactly over a broad-based accounting method. In many, many accounts, there's going to be a problem. It's going to go into the red and not the black. It's going to be a debt side. In other words, it's not going to be balanced. Accounts can't be balanced because they're not approximate mathematics. So that's what we analyzed and finally discovered why there are bankruptcies in a cycle situation. And then I target the 1930 Geneva Convention. Am I coming in clear yet?
There's still slight muffling, but I can understand you.
That neck microphone probably causes a problem. Maybe if I put it up. Is that better, perhaps? Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, try again.
Is that better? Is that better?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, I only put the... I don't have a Bluetooth in my ear. I probably should get one of those, but maybe they're better. But I use a dangly mic for my right ear. I don't put in two because I can't... My ear have two,
okay.
And I can't hear my... Yeah, it's all just procedural.
Yeah, I think I think that's the problem. The microphones are not as clear as if you're using a Bluetooth system.
Right, perhaps. Anyway, sorry about that technical editorial to everyone. All right, But what I'm saying is, I have said this before about the approximate mathematics issue. I don't think it's that overly complex. Well, maybe it is, but I think the truth in the matter, be it known, because of that. See, that's really the issue of why we really can't get into solvency, and we're pretty much stuck with the UCC bankruptcy. So we're really stuck with it, but we're not stuck with a remedy. We have a remedy for challenges, as we've often said about UCC 1-308, and 308 is a party with explicit reservation of privileges, performs promises and or assents under performance, demanded or offered by the other party, does not prejudice the privileges reserved. And that is 1-308 explicitly and annotated by me in terms of certain language in there, a few terms that I changed to make it more specific in terms of common law code violations that in its writing. Because there's a lot of documents that are written, but they're code violated. In other words, there's a code that has to be adhered to. Anyway, so that was a direct quote. And what it really means is that you're aware of the law and you're aware that they're not revealing the Uniform Commercial Code, especially in the courtroom. And they can't do it. But you're aware of it, and ironically, there's a remedy for that. If you're calling on the fact that you're not liable for the limited liability of a compelled benefit, which was the language of the old 1-207, which was amended to 1-308 in 2004, and that particular language means we're not liable for the compelled benefit of an unrevealed situation and the money. The money's debt, we're not liable for it, see? But you have to challenge that with 1-308. If you don't challenge it, then you were pretty much stuck. See, so that becomes the issue in terms of the truth. So what we do if we're overwhelmed by challenges, then you have to fight back with the Uniform Commercial Code. So we're not stuck in not having any remedy, but it's kind of like being on the edge because the government and the courts can't reveal it, and the many of the government officials and pseudo authority and all that business have no idea about the UCC, so they're in denial of it. But judges are aware of the UCC because they have to be, because they have to dismiss cases when they're challenged by the remedy of UCC. So that's interesting. See, I can get on the subject once in a while.
That's true.
Yeah, and we're about halfway through the show. So
yes,
if I just
I'm
get
sorry,
on a nice long roll, it could be a 15-minute legal dissertation or a lawful dissertation.
Well, there's no doubt that you can get on a roll, and it's usually very interesting. So I have no problem with that.
Well, right. Well, that's the whole point of this. When you get a proper perspective and you get a handle on what's going on, then there's enlightenment in that whole thing. And then there's also a relief, if you will. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean everything's perfect, but you still can get a grip on things, because most people are overwhelmed by the whole situation because they really they've skipped and scanned and haven't asked questions and tried to get answers to things. They get compensated or patronized or placated. Mostly if authority placates, they give you an answer or a doctor tells you this, here's the way it is, and then you don't question it. See, that's supposed to be an answer. Like the word answer comes from and sword to cut the quest. The quest, someone's on a quest and here comes the answer, so that's a sword that cuts the quest, you see. So it kills the issue, even though the answer may be totally inadequate. And then if people are in authority, they're timocracies, you know, they come in and plunder and things of that nature, then if they have guns and chains, then you're supposed to take what they say is recommendivist, the last say, and then you can't ask any more questions. You see, or they lock you up for asking questions or give you hemlock to drink like they did with Socrates, who basically was just talking. So the irony of that is he was supposed to be the first human being killed for a dissertation. You know, giving his opinion. He was killed for giving his opinion. See, and that's why Robert's Rules came into being, because the king would just lop your head off. So, eliminate them. You have no say. And then the bluff came in with Robert's Rules. We'll get this so we can establish a response to authority, when really it's just a bluff. I mean, that's what my teacher, Paul Twitchell, said, that these rules and regulations are just a mob checks, like constitutions are mob checks. But you put a decree up on the wall and say, basically you say, please don't come up here and kill me, written down on a piece of paper. And they can't read it very well. He says, please don't come up here and kill me at the podium, right? Okay, we won't. But he'll put it in a fashion of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Oh, the golden rule, I see. And what does that mean? Don't come here and kill me at the podium. That's what it means. Even though there's 10,000 of you in the audience, you can storm this podium and easily kill one person. Please don't do it. So the bluff works sometimes, you know. I say sometimes, because that's where revolutions are. You got a small handful of oligarchs, you know, leading the country, and then they come in and storm the castle, right? Ramparts. Here they come, you know. But then, see, the problem is organization. It's hard to organize people into attack. Okay, 100,000 people, let's attack the castle. And we could easily overcome them because they only have about 1,000 people in the castle. Okay, well, look at the 300. The Spartans were fighting the Persians, you know. They had 300 men. I think they held them off for quite a while. But the numbers themselves just overrun them. Even in the Zulu Wars in Africa, the Africans had all these Zulus attacking just a handful of British, right? But the British rifles, the 303s, they were so hot after a while, after killing so many Africans, they couldn't hold them in their hands, and eventually the Zulus just overwhelmed them because of sheer numbers. I mean, can you imagine? They were shooting so many of them that the gun was so hot that they couldn't hold it in their hands. Is that ridiculous or what? I mean, it's really I know, it's really sad, isn't it? Totally sad. But the sheer numbers themselves, the hordes of it, there was I think H.G. Wells or somebody was writing some stories in the past about there were some people in the mountains where they were attacked by these big tarantulas, right? And they had these shotgun pellets, and they would shoot the shotgun and kill like thousands of tarantulas, but then they would come and gang up against them. It's like the idea of entomology, like the bugs and stuff. You wonder why they just don't overwhelm, right? Because we have a really good bluff going on called cities. Hey, I'm on a pretty good roll here. This is fun stuff.
I think you are. I think you probably should do this more often in the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, isn't it a big bluff with nature? You know, we bluff it for a while and eventually, oh, yeah, that's right. A tsunami can wipe out New York City in a heartbeat, you know? And then finally the waves go, oh, yeah, we can destroy everything. How do we get fooled in not being able to do that? Or like my favorite one is cats, right? They were groomed to be at the gates of the temples. They were supposed to be guarding the gates, and they're real powerful. But then we've domesticated them to behave themselves. But like I always say, the pet alligator, you got a leash on the alligator, it can turn around and bite your foot off at any moment it wanted to, right? But I wouldn't recommend doing the pet alligator. That's just an analogy by me that I use sometimes. But even the cats, they're funny. They got these really sharp razor teeth. You know, they can take a hunk out of you any time right in your neck and kill you. But they don't, right? You see, so it's very interesting. I mean, that's really interesting stuff when you think about how ridiculous it is in terms of the bluffs that we have going on with the whole universe, in terms of trying to maintain a society when in reality we're all animals, basically. But maybe there's we can hold out a white flag or the olive branch of saying, right, don't come up here and kill me at the podium. And they'll go, okay, we won't. For at least 5 minutes, right? If you take too long, you've had it. That's why I only get 30 minutes each week to do this, right? Otherwise, they'll storm the Bastille.
That's right. We don't want that to happen again.
Yeah, we don't want that to happen. So I got on the topic this week. Everybody should really be happy that I did a little bit, correct? But after doing this for nearly 10 years, I guess I'm entitled to go off the subject once in a while, right?
It's your show. You can do what you want, right?
That's right. You know, I've said that many times, right? Well, you know, like I said, a serious situation, you bring levity to it. How do you do that? Well, it's just paradoxical, best case, you know. How can you laugh in the face of a bankruptcy? Well, I guess we do on this show all the time, right? I mean, the absurdity is beyond belief, the fact that we have debt in our pockets and don't even realize it or don't care because they'll take it. They'll take our debt and you can buy things with the debt. That's the thing that just really is unbelievable. They'll take an IOU, you go out and buy some food, and they take your IOU and it's okay.
Yeah.
You give them a promissory note, right? And they don't even realize it and they're okay. Because they pass the promissory notes around too, see? And therein lies the truth in the matter, and it's not even my perspective. It's a fact. It's not a Seinfeld nuance, right, in terms of his inane perceptions of making millions of dollars when he does it. It's not my relative inanity. It's just the facts in the matter, that the money is not a credit instrument. I mean, the truth be known, right? And then people go, oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah, your whole life you've been using debt to buy goods and services. I mean, think about how absurd that is. Isn't it just crazy?
Yeah, people don't think about it, though. It's just, you know. We've discussed in shows before, people don't think about it. As long as they're able to buy what they want, they don't care whether it's debt or credit. It doesn't matter to them.
So what is that called, though, as you know?
What is what called?
What is that ability called, the phrase, purchasing power, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. And people know that. They're aware of that phrase, purchasing power, but that's it. it only has purchasing power, but it don't, and it mounts a debt. It mounts up the debt, right? And then people aren't concerned about that. They don't think it's an issue, and it might not be from the standpoint that we have that deficit spending that Keynes created back in the 1930s. In his book, I think it's Money, Interest, and Employment, which is a very complex treatise that actually had a written interpretations of it. It was complex, but it really isn't complex because it's simple. And the main thrust of it was that the marginal efficiency of capital prevails. You can't have efficient efficiency of capital because that's what I said before. It's in a group, it's like C average. You can only get maybe 70% of efficiency. So that's a marginal efficiency because we know a C is an average grade. But to try to eke out efficient efficiency in a relative world is impossible. So that's why, and that I guess that sounds complex to people, but I think I bring a perspective of ease to make it simpler because of Keynesian's economic jargon that appears to be complex, but it really isn't. But for me, it's easy because I have a focus on that. People have often said I'm a real eminent economist, but I joke about it. In college, I was real lame at mathematics. You have to have a lot of mathematics to major in economics, at least to pass the classes. So I sort of minored in most of that in terms of not having to take heavy mathematics courses. But now I realize I'm very versed in mathematics. As I got older, I was able to spend time and study, because that's really the issue when you're in school. They rush you into, study and read a bunch of books. They give you a bunch of tests. And then you're supposed to come out on top when you virtually have no clue what it is, because they don't give you a lot of the proper explanation. Especially literarily, in terms of mathematicians have no idea how to explain an equation in literary forms. They don't. Even to this day, they still don't. I've remarked about that many times. Well, I'll read mathematics books today, and the mathematicians think they can explain it in words, but they're mathematicians. Their expertise is numbers and equations and not the concatenation of letters in literature. See, in terms of word forms or the definitions of what words are, that's not their expertise. Their speciality is logo. See, they're not in the antithetical worlds of language. I know that may sound complex, but that's the nature of that. People review it too at the end and replay it. That's the nice thing about, if you don't get it the first time, you can replay it over and over until you get it. And nobody's going to complain about it if you do it in private. They won't think you're stupid, right? So, that's the shame of it. You know, if you don't get it the first time, so what? Just ask the question. It's not, these things aren't hard if you put a little effort into it. You know, I'm a amateur logodidalian. I like words, and I studied, as you know, I study reference books and dictionaries and stuff, even to this day, so I repeat and learn words on a constant basis. It's sort of a hobby of mine, I'll say. All right, so we're getting down to the end of the show. Gabriella, thank you for being on the show each week. Your pertinency and wisdom is always greatly accepted by me. I thank you for that.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's interesting every week. Thanks for doing the show.
Well, it's my pleasure indeed. And I have to waste about 30 seconds here. I could sing a song, right? You want me to sing a song?
Well, you could probably not sing a song.
not sing a song? Because it's not a variety show, right?
Right. But you do have a nice voice. I enjoy your singing.
Ah.
I don't know if this is the right venue, but that's totally up to you. But I think we've probably blown 30 seconds off in this repartee.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. That was very helpful. I do truly appreciate that. All right, so this is Grants and Tell You for my show, the Grants and Tell You show. And I want to thank the journeymen that come each week, and I want to thank the new people that come each week as well. Everybody have a really great week, and have one of, as I always say, a week of increase and gain some wherewithal. Have a great one. This is Grantson saying, signing off, and goodbye for now.